Hey, I'm Jamie from Still My Art Games, and today I'm going to talk about my top 10 favorite digital roguelike games that I think might be really appealing to primarily tabletop gamers like me. And also delve a little bit into the mechanisms of these games and how they may or may not translate well to tabletop games. For those of you who don't know, and I'm still kind of learning this terminology too, because I don't play a lot of digital games, but a roguelike game is a game that fits a few different categories. I'll mention those categories in a second, but the primary aspect of it is that when you complete a run in a roguelike digital game, there's a sense of progression at the end of that run that happens at the end of that run, and even during the run a little bit. And if you die during the run, or if you fail during the run, you lose everything and you start over from the beginning. A roguelite game, and there will be a little bit of overlap in this list. So arguably, some of these might be roguelite games. Roguelite game has many of those same mechanisms as a roguelike game, but you get to, even after you die, you get to carry over some information to the next game. An example of this in the tabletop world is Time Stories. In Time Stories, you go on multiple runs through the same scenario, where every time you do a run, you carry over, typically, not every scenario in Time Stories, but most scenarios, you carry over more than just knowledge to the next scenario. You might carry over some items, some characters, things like that. Not to the next scenario, I'm sorry, but to the next run within the same scenario. So a few of the things that help define a roguelike, they feature mastery over multiple runs. So even if you're not improving your skills in the game, or your mechanical abilities in the game, you are improving your knowledge of the game. So you have the sense of mastery of getting better and better at the game. That's the case for many games, though. Multiple encounters of increasing difficulty. So these games often feature kind of different paths you can take, where you're doing different things. You have different encounters. Maybe you'll get some treasure. You have shops that you can buy stuff along the way. But it's a fairly preset path, just little branching choices along the way. And among those encounters, they get harder and harder as you go on throughout the roguelike scenario. Many of them are procedurally generated, and so no two runs are the same. Oftentimes, they can be fairly similar, but not exactly the same. This isn't necessarily a defining characteristic of these types of games, but most of them are procedurally generated. And that means also not completely random. There's it's kind of a hybrid between a preset order of operations that's always the same and complete randomness. It's a little bit of hybrid in the middle there. Most of these games, losing is fun and fast, and setup is fast. That's a key to these games. These are not typically games that take, like some video games can take 80 hours to complete these games. For roguelike games, typically they're much shorter. You lose within 10 to 20 minutes, you win within 30 to 40 minutes at most. That's fairly standard for this style of game. Rewards and deck, so many of these are deck building. Rewards and deck building happen after each encounter, but not during. And this is something I'm talking about a little bit more when I talk about the specific games, but I found this to be a pretty common element in these games, where when you're in the middle of an encounter, you are not actually getting better at anything. It's after you defeat that encounter, after you complete that encounter, that you earn a reward that makes you better for the rest of the run. And oftentimes there are a few options when you gain that reward. You choose one of them, that makes you better for the rest of the run. Permadeath is something that's fairly frequent in these. That's the idea that you, when you die in the run, you don't carry anything over to the next run. You have to start over from the beginning. And I think that's it. So I've been talking about this topic a little bit in various videos about different games and on my livecast. And someone named Yoa reached out with some recommendations, and we had a good conversation over email about this style of game. He had some good thoughts about it, but I wanted to throw out his recommendations first before I go into mine. And he recommended these in general, not just for tabletop gamers. He recommended Hades, Dead Cells, Slay the Spire, Into the Breach, Against the Storm, and Rogue Legacy 2. And I should mention, in reference to Yoa's list here, he mentioned a few games that require, I'll call it like video game dexterity. Like quick reflexes, where you're fighting a lot of enemies, and it's something that doesn't really match up well with tabletop games. Tabletop games there are a few real-time games or simultaneous games, but most of them are turn-based. in the tabletop game space. And so these dexterity elements in video games where you have to like hit someone with a sword at the right moment and then dodge back and then parry, that stuff I think is oftentimes abstracted in tabletop games. And I don't know if there's a direct corollary there between the two. So I did not include those style of roguelike game in my list. I didn't think there was I honestly, even though they might be great games, I'm sure they are. I've heard great things about those games. That I'm speaking specifically about Hades, Dead Cells, and Rogue Legacy 2. That I don't know if they translate as well as some of these turn-based, often card-driven or dice-driven roguelike games to the tabletop space and the tabletop gamers. That's my opinion. Feel free to disagree with it. Some tabletop games that are already in this genre or kind of close to it. Some of these I've played, some of them I haven't. Mini Rogue is one that I haven't played. Dwarf Romantic is one. The Dwarf Romantic digital game is not considered a roguelike game, but it is a game where you're just trying to get like farther and farther and farther, which I think has a feeling to me of a roguelike game. You're trying to get a little bit farther than the previous run. That's more of an intrinsic motivation than what the game is asking you to do. There is a tabletop version of Dwarf Romantic too that captures that same essence, and you can play it with multiple players. One Deck Dungeon had a little bit of this feel to me. Time Stories, like I mentioned, depending on the scenario, a little bit more rogue-lite than rogue-like. Chronicles of Stampatia, someone mentioned that on a live cast. I haven't played that one. Paperback Adventures, I haven't played that one, but that I think was inspired by a few of these games, including Slay the Spire. There's the Slay the Spire tabletop game that will be coming out this year, maybe next year. Dead Cells also has a tabletop game coming out that has that is, I believe, a rogue-lite game, and that you will... Like the game is almost designed to make sure that you do die and then you have to restart, but you have more powers to do better in the next run. Someone mentioned Ra, which I thought was interesting because Ra, on Ra's player mat, I don't think of Ra as a roguelike game, but in the auction game Ra, every round, half of the things that you accumulate, essentially, like one entire side of your player mat in the most recent version of Ra, goes away, it disappears. And the other half is there to carry over to the next run and then scoring at the end of the game. So not really a rogue-like game, but it does have that sense of you're progressing with some elements and some elements are resetting for the next round. Set a Watch. It's been a little while since I played Set a Watch, but thinking back, I think it does remind me a little bit of rogue-like games. And then Challengers, which Challengers, I think, is maybe the most similar to a rogue-like game right now. In Challengers, you have these little face-to-face auto battler duels with other players in a tournament format. And you are not improving your deck at all during the duels. You're just having the duel. And then after the duel, you get to craft your deck a little bit. You get to remove some cards from your deck. You get to add some cards to your deck. And then you go back into the duel. This feels very similar to a lot of roguelike deck building games in particular, and might be the best tabletop comparison right now of a game that does this, especially with up to 8 players. So many of these roguelike games on the digital space are you versus the computer. Challengers takes that format and lets you play against a bunch of human opponents, up to 7 other human opponents, and some of those opponents can also be AI opponents as well. Anyway, let's get on to my top 10. I'll share my other screen here so you can see some visual references of these games I'm going to talk about. This first one is Legends of Runeterra. This is a game that I don't think this game started out as a roguelike game, but then when roguelikes started to get pretty popular in the digital space, I think they added a roguelike format, and it was very well reviewed. And some people recommended it to me, and I tried it, and I really enjoyed the roguelike gameplay of this. So it is a roguelike dueling game. It's a little bit more like there's a dueling Hearthstone. It's a little bit like Hearthstone, but it has some card leveling up mechanisms that feel really good. And you can see here these branching paths that you take to either get different rewards, to have different encounters as you move through different scenarios. I like how they're overlaid onto cities. It feels a little bit like you're exploring that city. And this is actually a pretty satisfying element of roguelikes that I probably downplay a little bit when I'm playing, but I love split paths in games. It's one of the reasons I really love the tabletop game Clank, because you choose a path and immediately you're wondering, oh, I wonder what would have happened if I'd chosen this other path. And it makes me want to play that run again or try again. So Clank has a little bit of that too. The leveling up the cards element in Legends of Runeterra is really good. It's really interesting that your cards can get better as you're playing like the cards themselves get better, and even things that you do within the game can temporarily make a card better. It can make that card better and better during that individual encounter. This is, I think, tough to carry over to the tabletop game space, unfortunately, because just modifying cards is difficult unless you want to make it a legacy game where you're writing on the cards, or use a game with a lot of sleeves and clear cards where you're sliding those clear cards into the sleeves to change the information on the card itself. There are some games that do this, but it's pretty rare. I think it's pretty tough to play test too, but it is an innovative mechanism. And I think Legends of Runeterra, like all the games on this list, are worth playing. In fact, I'll have to end the list with my honorable mentions because I jumped right into my top 10, didn't even do this. So yeah, I will end with an honorable mention list that I forgot to do before this. And number nine, I have Wild Frost. I really like the look of Wild Frost. It's very, I don't know, it's just the aesthetic of it is very pleasing to me. But the key hook, this is a digital deck building roguelike game. You're trying to defeat the enemies. And the core hook here that isn't displayed all that well in this image that I found, I kept looking for a good image, is the game uses a timer. There's this timer that ticks down every turn that moves you towards resetting certain abilities. So whenever that timer refreshes, you can refresh your hand, you can refresh different abilities on your cards. The timer also is tied to the opponents you're facing, where they have a countdown timer where they're going to do something bad to you in a certain amount of time, and you can see it coming, and you can see the time ticking down. And the game even adds ways to manipulate that timer to make it tick down faster or slower. So I think, I mean, that's the main hook of this game. But that tied with the card-based deck building, I think. In fact, you can see that here on the Sunburst Tutu, count down the timer by two. So you accelerate the timer there. I think this is a really neat mechanism in a game to use the timer in this way to speed up or slow down different abilities that you want to refresh or trigger. And I think as for the tabletop space, does that timer work? Yeah, I think timers work because this isn't a real-time timer. This is just a little dial that you would turn to say, okay, we're getting a little bit closer to the refresh right now. I'm going to manipulate this timer. I think that would work fine in the tabletop space. That's Wild Frost at number nine. At number eight, we have Rogue Book. This is a cool one. It could even be higher on the list for some gamers that really love, not necessarily tactical games, but it does have this hex-based map exploration element to it with a heavy fog of war, which is tied heavily into the game. So in Rogue Book, you are traveling through a book, essentially. That is what this is. And there's all these different hexes that you cannot see what's on them until you choose to use your ink to reveal them. And you reveal different enemies that you can fight, just little monster encounters like these swords, different places where you can go buy items, some boxes that just give you a choice of treasure. You can collect coins, other little things along the way, depending on what you reveal. And I don't think, as far as I found, I don't think it's possible to have enough ink to reveal the entire map. And so you're always left wondering a little bit of, what did I miss? What did I not see? Do I want to do this run again and try to discover some more stuff? The way you get ink, though, is to have these encounters. So if you defeat some monsters, and the monster battles look a lot like some of these other ones that I've talked about, like Wild Frost, where it's a deck building element, you're playing through your deck. If you defeat those monsters, you get more ink and you can reveal more of the map. So I like how the encounters are tied towards this visual lifting of the fog of war on the map to give you more benefits. You're eventually moving towards a final boss. And for the final boss and all these different encounters, you are mashing up the decks of two different characters. I also really like this deck mashup. So within your starting deck, you don't just have, you have cards for both of these different characters that play out in different ways. And sometimes playing a card of one character can have that character move to the front of the line, meaning that they'll take damage from the enemies that you fight. Overall, I really like the mashup of the cards, the decks, and this idea of gaining ink from the encounters to reveal more of the map. Really satisfying experience. I could definitely see other tabletop gamers enjoying Rogue Book. Does it translate to the tabletop space? Sure. I mean, we've seen plenty of games with hexes where you reveal the hexes as you explore and as you lift up a fog of war in games. You just flip over the hexes. Maybe it takes a little bit of time to set up, but it's certainly possible to do that. And mashing up two decks of cards into one, we've seen plenty of asymmetric pairings in games, including something like this in Marvel Champions and Smash Up. So I think that translates well to the tabletop game space as well. At number, so that is number eight, Rogue Book. At number seven, I have one of the two mobile, primarily mobile games on this list, and this is Void Tyrant. This is a really cool little game that uses a blackjack style mechanism to determine how you do these little challenges. There's a lot in this game that I haven't unlocked, and in fact, I'll talk about that in a second, but the core mechanism of the game is that you are trying to get as close to 12, I believe 12 is the magic number, as possible with the cards that you randomly reveal. So if you get exactly 12, you get to deal a hit to the enemy right away. If you bust, so if you go over 12 in the cards that you're revealing from your deck, the numbers on those cards, if you go over 12, the enemy gets to hit you. If you end up just, whenever the enemy stops, enemy acting almost like a dealer in blackjack, if they stop and you end up with a higher number than them, then you get to hit the enemy. And then the numbers reset. So it's this neat little blackjack mechanism. And along the way, you're manipulating your deck, you're manipulating the amount of damage you can deal to the enemy, things like that. But I really like this mechanism. I really like the little miniature burst of push your luck along the way. So it, you aren't winning or losing the encounter based on pushing your luck. You're just winning or losing the opportunity to deal damage to your opponent based on push your luck. Adding that little, a few different levels there away from just losing an encounter, I think is really, really clever, especially when you do have luck of the draw as a factor in this game. And then the fact that you can manipulate your deck and add and change the cards in your deck and the abilities that you're using as you play, I think that's really cool. Now, the one thing I wanted to pause and mention real quick for Void Tyrant and many of these games is that a lot of these roguelike deck builders and roguelike games in general, they add a lot of different abilities to keep track of. Quite a few different abilities to keep track of. My preference when I'm playing these games is to focus on the cards themselves, improving my deck, taking cards out of the deck, putting cards in the deck. That is, for me as a tabletop gamer, that's enough information for me to keep track of. However, there's a lot of other things you can do. In fact, there's a ton of other stuff you can do in games like Void Tyrant, all these different mini games, and you can just focus on a ton of different abilities that trigger at different times. And I'm curious, for tabletop gamers who are watching this, who also like digital roguelikes, are you like me in that way, where you focus mostly on the deck, like the core interface of the game, or do you like all those little other abilities that that bring the game to life? I'm curious about that. It seems like something that digital gamers are more equipped to handle, people who primarily play games digitally. I am not as equipped to handle them, but that might just be me. That is Void Tyrant at number seven. Really clever game. At number six, we have... this is Dicey Dungeons. Yeah, Dicey Dungeons is a wonderful little roguelike that uses dice. I think maybe the only one on this list that uses dice as the primary mechanism. So you're rolling some dice and you're choosing abilities on which to place these dice. So you're, every time you do a run, you choose a few different abilities. Like you choose, I chose the sword here, I chose a whip, I chose a duplicate ability to use in this round. So you're choosing the abilities to enter an encounter with, and then you're rolling dice. And I think you can also change the types of dice that you roll over time. But most of it is choosing the abilities that you're rolling that help you deal damage, like this one does. This one duplicates a die. This one deals a specific type of damage to an enemy. Oh, and here's another ability. Reroll a die. And then the enemy is going to deal some damage to you as well. But the pairing of these abilities with the randomness of the dice is something that I really enjoyed. I like dice placement games. I like a little bit of luck, a little bit of randomness and variability there, but paired with the agency that you have over the dice manipulation and these abilities, I think is really clever. Reminds me maybe a little bit of the game Spots, in that you're choosing... Spots kind of has this. Spots has six different abilities that you can activate, but you aren't crafting those abilities over time. They are set for the game. But it still reminds me a little bit of that game. If you like Spots, I think you might like Dicey Dungeons. But yeah, I think this reminds me a lot of... different various dice placement games in the tabletop space. I think this translates well over to the tabletop game mechanism space. That is Dicey Dungeons at number six. And number five, we have, actually, no, I have another primarily mobile game coming up after this. This is Dawncaster. Dawncaster is a really neat little deck building game that features three different resources. So in a lot of these digital deck builders, including one that I'll talk about later, you are spending resources to play cards. This is actually very different than most tabletop deck building games, where if you have a card in your hand, you can just play it. You've invested in that card at some other time where you've paid the cost to get it into your deck. you typically don't have to pay to play it. But in many of these digital games, you do have a limited number of resources to use to play cards. So you get a hand of cards, but you can't actually play them all because you can't afford it. And Doncaster takes that a step further by giving you three different resources to spend, and different cards cost different resources. Like if you have a green card, you can see very small right here. I have two green resources. That means I can only play cards with a wild cost or a green cost. If I had a card that had a red cost, or I believe blue might be the other cost in Doncaster, I can't play those cards. So you're crafting your deck over time based on certain color combinations that that leads to the game feeling different than previous times that you played. So I really like that element of Doncaster, and also just the abilities that emerge in Doncaster from the different character classes like this, like the rogue. They feel very different. Like the abilities are really, really well designed. If you're ever designing the deck builder, I highly recommend playing Doncaster to get a feel of the different abilities that they have in the game. Like, I can't even think of any examples off the top of my head, but they're really clever keyword abilities in the game that make each character feel unique. I think this is one that translates well to the tabletop space because of the deck building element of it. And there are elements of the game that I haven't seen in other tabletop deck building games. That's Doncaster at number 5 on my list. And number 4 is the last primarily mobile game. And this is Forward Escape the Fold. This is the game that I think reminds me the most of what it makes me think that this could be a tabletop game. I'm not sure if it would have enough substance to hit the table a lot in a tabletop game, but there probably is a way to do it. The core idea in this game is that you are this character right here. You have some health, you have some abilities that are pinned to you, and you move up through these cards. So you move up either orthogonally adjacent to you or diagonally. So I can move right here and then grab this healing potion, but in doing so, I lose the opportunity to fight this monster. I lose the opportunity to get these coins. So you're only gaining one card per row. And then you do it again. You move it to the next row. And again, you're moving orthogonally or adjacently. And so if I end up over in this left column, it means that I will miss out on this healing potion that's way over here because I can't move that far. So I like that I can see three rows of cards ahead of me. I can kind of plan ahead as to where I want to move to get the stuff that I want to get, especially if I want to get like this. It's a blood chest. That sounds dangerous up there. Some of them are just treasure chests. But it's this constant, easy sense of progression where you're just moving your character forward, gaining something, then moving a little bit further. And then once the deck of cards runs out, then you complete that part of the run. All of this is part of like one set encounter. You complete that part of the encounter, and then you get a special ongoing ability or bonus usually a bonus or ability or item. And then you use that to continue until you lose. And it feels different than a lot of these digital deck builders in a good way. It feels a little refreshing there because you're not actually building a deck. You are making your character better as you would in like a dungeon crawl in a tabletop game, but you're not building a deck of cards. And yet it is still a card-driven game. So yeah, I really enjoy Forward Escape the Fold. It's a really nice little mobile game, and I would definitely recommend it for tabletop gamers. Inscription is number 3. So that was Forward to Skip the Fold at number 4. This is Inscription at number 3. This is a fantastic game that has a ton of stuff going on that I never even got to. I just enjoyed the first third of the game, which involves deck building with some dark twists to it, as well as like a little bit of an escape room element to it. I won't go into that part of the game, but the deck building part of the game, I think, is really clever and could definitely translate into a tabletop game, at least some of the mechanisms in it. The core idea here is that you are playing cards from your hand, spending a limited number of resources, including sometimes your own health to pay for these cards, and you're putting them in these combat rows. So the enemy is trying to get through and hit you, and you're putting these little forest critters in the way between you and them so that these cards can't hit you. Oftentimes you're sacrificing things. And the critters talk to you about how you make these sacrifices along the way as you are fighting these cards that the enemy is playing. That just like touches the bare bones surface of this game. There's so much that goes on under the surface, but even just the core basic mechanisms of having a deck building game where you're playing cards in certain rows that you're trying to hold back the opponent, who is almost like a tower defense game where the opponent is just coming at you and you need to stop them with cards that you're putting in front of them. is really satisfying. It's a really clever way of playing a deck building game. So that by itself, I would recommend Inscription 4, but there's so much more that you can discover if you want to go deeper into this game. I highly recommend it to tabletop gamers. That is Inscription at number 3. At number 2, the newest addition to the list is Balatro. This game is, I would say it's fairly hot right now at the recording of this video. And I think it will continue to be because it is a really satisfying combination of deck building and poker with a bunch of roguelike mechanisms where you're gaining cards, including these Joker cards that change the rules of the game and give you superpowers, basically, as you're playing this game. But again, just on its surface, the idea of having a single deck of cards that you are building out, you're changing, you're removing cards, you're adding cards, you're enhancing some cards and making them better. I believe this is a glass card that's super powerful, but it can break. It has a possibility of breaking. Maybe this is the glass card. That might be the glass one. And then you have these cards are super good. They just add to your multiplier. But the core hook of the game, in my opinion, is that you are not playing a poker hand against an opponent. You are playing against an opponent, but not you're not comparing your poker hand to their poker hand. Rather, you are trying to play such a good poker hand that you get a lot of enough points to defeat your opponent. And you have multiple hands that you can actually play. You can see over here, it says two hands left in this run. So the goal here, this is must be way deep in the game, way deeper than I got, is to get 70,000 points. So you have to get 70,000 points here. You do that by playing a hand that is worth this many points or however many points you can earn, plus a multiplier. This multiplier changes based on the jokers. The default multiplier is just how good that hand is. So like this number, I'm sorry, I misspoke a little bit. This number isn't just how good the hand is. It's also the values of the cards that you actually play in the hand. This number is how good the hand is. So this number will be higher, typically like 6 or 8, if it's a really good poker hand, like a full house, a royal flush, that type of thing. And this is better based on the exact cards that you're playing. But you don't always win with a single hand. You can create these super powerful single hands where you just win that encounter right away, but you don't always have to do that. Sometimes it takes multiple hands, but you only have a limited number of hands to do so. So you'll play a hand of cards, and then you'll draw a few more cards from the deck, refilling your hand of 8 cards, and you'll play from those cards to see how good of a hand that you can craft again. And along the way, you can even discard cards. So you can say, okay, if I get just one more ace, then I can have a royal flush or 4 of a kind. And so you might discard a few other cards in the hopes of drawing into that ace, which feels really good when it happens. So it kind of takes the best things of poker and deck building and combines them into one. And at the end of the run, and each encounter, you earn money that you can spend to gain better cards in your deck or better Joker cards. It's really satisfying to play. I think it's fairly intuitive for gamers to play this game if you know the basics of poker. Just this limited number of hand and discard system is really clever. It feels really good to manage that system well. That is Balatro at number 2. And I can see some of these mechanisms fitting into a tabletop game, although it's already pulling from tabletop games like poker and deck building games. The part that doesn't pull over well is the math. I mean, part of the fun of Balatro is getting these giant multipliers where the game does the math for you. That does not translate as well to a tabletop game. Anyway, that's Balatro at number 2. And number 1 is the one that really started it all, I think. And there might be some other smaller games that came before this, but Slay the Spire is a masterpiece of a game. And I think one of the reasons I included it on this list, despite all the innovation that's happened in these other games that I mentioned since then, is that Slay the Spire is just really, really easy and satisfying to play. It gives you very little friction between whenever you want to start a run of Slay the Spire. There's no friction there at all. It is relaxing whenever I play Slay the Spire. The core system is very simple. You have a limited amount of mana to play cards from your hand. This one costs 0, this one costs 1. So with this hand, you get it with 3 mana, you can play all the cards in your hand. They have very simple abilities that deal damage to your opponents. Your opponents telegraph their moves, so you know what they're about to do to you, especially if there's multiple opponents. You can choose the ones to go after on that turn. And you play as many cards as you can from your turn, typically, and in the right order for for your particular hand, then this hand goes away. You redraw a new hand and you play as many cards from that hand as you can to try to defeat the opponent. And it each run starts off very easy. It's very easy to defeat your first few opponents. And then it gets harder and harder as you advance. And your life carries over. Your life doesn't ever reset. You have to buy more life or earn more life. That's one of the key hooks to keep you really focused on doing your best in every single encounter. Because like right now, this character has 47 out of 82 health. And so for them to complete the whole run, they only have 47 health left to complete the entire run from then on. They don't want to lose any health or they're not going to get to the end of the run. I don't know. There's so much cleverness in this game. I have another video about how much I love Slay the Spire and all the different core mechanisms that make it really stand out as a special deck building game. But it's the one that I would say I still come back to the most and is probably still the most popular digital deck building roguelike game out there. So I have to recommend it. I think it, I don't have to, but I want to because I really do love the game. And I think any tabletop gamers who haven't played it will also find a lot of joy in this game, especially if you like deck building games. Will it translate to a tabletop version? We'll see. There's a version coming out, I think, later this year. It was on Kickstarter last year. I think it involves a lot of sleeves where as you're improving the cards over the course of the game. We'll see if that works out. And they also took a solo game and turned it into a multiplayer game, which works sometimes. I've seen, as I mentioned, with Challengers and Dwarf Romantic, that can work, especially in a cooperative format, but it doesn't always scale as well. So we'll see how that does. I'm very curious to see myself how the tabletop version of Slay the Spire works. But yeah, that is my top 10 list. And as I mentioned, I forgot to do the honorable mentions. So let me go back and do those real quick. So these are mostly games that I have not played. Luck Be a Landlord, Astraea, Six-Sided Oracle, Dice Folk, Cobalt Core, Faster Than Light, Monster Train, Against the Storm. And then three that I have played that I did enjoy but didn't quite make my top 10. One is Marvel Snap, which I wouldn't quite consider a roguelike game, but it does have that, especially as you are like starting out in Marvel Snap, you have an encounter, you have a little matchup, and then you move on to the next opponent. And every time you play, you typically gain resources that you can use to add a card to your deck. And the deck crafting element happens outside of the main scenario. So you aren't improving your deck while you play, you're improving it afterwards, between each scenario. So even though it isn't technically a roguelike, as far as I know, it ends up feeling that way a little bit. I thought it was worth mentioning here. Into the Breach is a very tactical, spatial roguelike game. I think if you're a tactical gamer, you might really enjoy Into the Breach. And then Griftlands. Griftlands came very close to making the list. It isn't one that I've wanted to return to since my initial play. It's just maybe a little bit too much of mental overload for me to get into it. But I really liked in Griftlands that the encounters that you have, you have the choice of not just solving them by fighting the other person, but also by negotiating with them and talking to them. In fact, you have two completely separate decks of cards. You have a fighting deck that you're cultivating and crafting, and you have a kind of a negotiation charisma deck that you're cultivating and crafting, and you're deciding which of them that you want to use in any given encounter. I think that's really clever. I love when games give you options beyond just deal damage, fight the bad guy. Usually there's another way you can deal with that too. So I like the way that Griftlands does that. So that is my top 10 digital roguelikes that I think other tabletop gamers will enjoy or could potentially enjoy. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic, whether you have some favorites from my list, some favorites that you've heard about and that are coming out soon, or some favorites that you played that I didn't mention at all. I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments below, as well as any thoughts about how these mechanisms might translate to tabletop games. And also in particular, if you have any tabletop games in mind, tabletop games that really make you think of roguelike, digital roguelike games, let me know. Recommend them in the comments as well. All right. Thanks.